show and walk out. There he is. Wow, I got to remember. Welcome. I got my microphone on.
Sorry, yes, about that.
Bob's waving at me. Hey, your microphone's on while the music's playing out there. Oh, my gosh. Well, good. You sound really good now.
Excellent. Well, welcome to the New Spirit Radio Show by Nova Spiritus. And here we are, Halloween Eve. And a lot is going on here. Yeah. Ooh. A lot is going on here. We're actually moving the offices and the services here in San Jose. We're downscaling to a smaller office and back in Campbell. And then we're going to hold the spiritual services here in San Jose, actually back in Campbell at the Campbell Community Center, right next to the room that we had back in 2001, 12 years ago. And it's going to be a little bit later in the afternoon. The services will be from 1 to 2. And that will be in the Mary Campbell room, room Q84, from 1 to 2 on Sundays in Campbell. And I will be sending out email blasts to my Bay Area email list and posting it on Facebook and sylviabrown.com and novus.org. So if you have any questions, you can always go there and check it out. And, of course, moving is so much fun.
Entertainment.
Oh, but a lot of great help after services last Sunday. A lot of some folks stuck around for a few hours packing boxes and getting us ready. So we're almost there. So anyway, welcome to the New Spirit Radio Show. I am your host, Michael McClellan, with my co-host, Tom Bigley. And our helper in the chat room is Bob Ingold. So welcome. Thank you for listening. And, of course, we also always like to thank the people that come and listen to the archive. You know, if they can't listen live, then they are. So how are you doing, Tom?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm excited. We got another week here. Just a couple of reminders. Chat is free. Whoever wants to sign up and listen, yes, it looks like you are getting on as a host, but just sign up free, and then you can chat with the others that are, talking to each other on chat. If you got questions, again, you can also email them. If you don't want to be in the chat room, you can email them to newspirit@novus.org. So we'll be monitoring that email address. If you got call-ins and you want to ask a question, make sure you press 1, and it lets us know that you got a question. Otherwise, you're welcome just to listen. And we have a winner. Somebody came in Sunday and finally figured out who was Tom and who's Michael in the picture. The person came from out of town to participate in church services in San Jose and identified me right off the bat. And I was like, oh, okay, somebody got it. So that's still open for those that can't figure out who's Tom and Michael in the pictures. Then let's see, we have we're continuing on with, what do we got? Oh, it's Blessings from the Other Side. So we've got more information waiting and ready to go.
But first, I want to talk about Halloween.
Well,
you know, it's,
share with us.
Huh?
I said, well, share with us.
Excellent. All right. Well, it's such a different holiday, and, you know, doing some research and looking it up and, you know, where did this kind of odd holiday come from, where you see witches and ghosts and skeletons and demons and other characters knocking at your door and hollering trick or treat, and they expect a treat or you will be tricked. So it's really the only day that we give free food to strangers knocking on our doors and display carved vegetables on our front porches. So it is, to me, kind of a strange holiday. Looking it up, you know, Christmas is the holiday that brings in the most money, and you're wondering which holiday brings in the second most, Is it Valentine's Day? No. Easter? No. Thanksgiving? Nope. It's Halloween. It's very popular and profitable in the United States. So celebrating Halloween is good for the economy. And for all you folks out there that are part of a study group, you already got this information in your study group newsletter. But for those folks in New Spirit Radio land that aren't part of a study group yet, I just wanted to give a little bit about the origin of Halloween. So where did the word Halloween come from? Hallow in the Old English means holy or sacred, as in the Lord's Prayer, hallowed be thy name. So Hallow's Eve or Halloween simply means evening of the holy persons and refers to the evening before All Saints Day, which is November 1st, and that's on both the Anglican and the Roman Catholic calendars. Okay, so what is All Saints Day? A quick little history is that in the early years when Rome persecuted the Christians, so many martyrs died for the faith that the church actually set aside a special day to honor them. And a pope dedicated a temple to honor the martyrs on May 13th in the year 609. And this special day, which eventually became a festival of All Hallows or All Saints Day, honoring all saints who had died from Roman persecutions in the first 300 years after Christ. And in the 8th century, another pope moved the festival All Saints Day to November 1st. And this was done in part to substitute the popular pagan celebration of the Celtic New Year. So the pagan celebration of the Celtic New Year honored the sun god, supposedly Samhain, Lord of the Dead. And the Celts lived more than 2,000 years ago, which is Great Britain, Ireland, and France. And after feasting, the villagers would put on masks and costumes representing the souls of the dead, and then paraded to the outskirts of town, leading the ghosts or spirits away. And actually, Halloween was banned in America. During the first 200 years in America, Halloween was not observed. And many of the Protestant settlers rejected the holiday, along with other holidays, on the calendar of the Roman Church. But then in the 1840s, it became more popular. So now in the 21st century, Halloween has become an important holiday to the growing number of believers in Satanism and practitioners of the occult. So where did the jack-o'-lantern come from? The Druid priest instructed followers to extinguish their fires and make sacrifices to the Lord of Death. And they gathered around a fire of sacrifice, thought to be a sacred fire, and took fire from that to rekindle their own fires. And a vegetable was carved out and used to carry the fire home. So that is basically, there's more in the study group newsletter if you want to read about it, you know, what some of the fundamentalists say about Halloween and some of the false statements that they make. But basically, in America, it became actually a way that accustomed to have come from the immigrants from Ireland and Scotland. And a lot of pranks, including tipping over outhouses and unhinging fence gates. So they were saying it was the work of fairies, elves, and witches and goblins. So it was kind of become kind of destructive, so to let off steam for the crowded and poor urban dwellers. And the Halloween began activity as trick-or-treat was intended to control and displace the disruptive pranks. So that's basically kind of a short version of the history of Halloween. And so the bottom line for me is basically Halloween is, you know, okay, but what's most important really is celebrating the people that died being persecuted by the Romans for their Christian faith. I'm sure some of us in a past life were, you know, crucified or whatever, persecuted. And so what's most important, I think we can light a candle tomorrow night after all the activities are kind of died down, and say a prayer, you know, for, well, Sylvia says you don't have to pray for the dead, but the prayer is for just honoring All Saints Day, which of course is Friday, November 1st.
Wow. That was really good. Thank you.
Sure. Sure. I thought it was
interesting
learning to look that up.
Yeah, I enjoyed listening to, you know, history of things that, you know, where they come from, the origins and stuff, and it's always fun to find out, you know, how far back things have come from and evolved, and you know, that what's the path that those things have followed. I mean, we're coming to Thanksgiving and Christmas, and you know, those are always fun to hear about as well. But yeah, that was great.
Yeah, it's nice to know a little bit more. It's funny when you talk to people and you ask them, you know, how Halloween came about and what it's really all about. And a lot of people, you know, don't know. So
it's not about candy and costumes?
Oh, candy, sugar. Yeah, I was at the store and I'm going, if I don't want to buy sugar, then maybe you have like little boxes of raisins or something that I can give out, because, you know, I'm not that big on sugar. Even the grandkids, you know, I don't really buy them candy or sugar. They usually get like nuts and, you know, seeds and stuff like that. So I guess that's my own thing. Don't really want to promote the candy sugar thing.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well,
any more
should we get into a little bit?
Yeah, okay. I was just going to, we're interrupting each other here and asking if we're going to, if we want to move on. So, yeah, I've got the next part here from continuation from last week. So, here we go.
I was especially relieved to learn about option lines because until then, I thought I was a chronic failure in one area of my life for no good reason, no matter how hard I tried. And after almost 5 decades of readings, I have yet to meet a client who doesn't feel exactly the same way. Now, I know it's not just our imagination. There is one area of life we're each bound to struggle with more than any other. And furthermore, we're the geniuses that chose it. When writing our charts on the other side, we're given a list of 7 option lines to choose from. Love, health, finance, career, spirituality, family, and social life. The option line we declare ours for the life we're about to live is essentially the area of this earthly school we've decided to major in, the area we'll agonize over the most, and the area in which we feel we have the most to learn. My option line is family. So I guess it makes sense that while I chose a wonderful father and a grandmother I idolized, I also chose an abusive mother and a sister I'm still occasionally estranged from to this day. I've had 4 husbands. My 2 sons, whom I cherish, have 2 different fathers and have only recently reconciled, thank God, after not speaking to each other for years. At any rate, somehow, out of those raw materials, I've tried for 64 years to manufacture a sane, happy Norman Rockwell family. All of us, hand in hand, skipping merrily through life together behind our white picket fence. The contrast between my idealized image and the reality is, to put it mildly, jaw-dropping. But because I know that this is the option line I chose, at least I understand why I can't seem to get this family thing right, no matter how much love and effort I put into it. Why my feelings about it are passionate, and why it's so important for me in this lifetime to keep trying. I'm sure that if you do an honest scan of your life, you'll recognize which of the 7 option lines is yours. Figuring it out is worth the time it takes, if only to reassure yourself that you're not being victimized by some dark random force. You're just struggling through that one subject you yourself selected to be the hardest for you this time around. full of love, joy, perfect health, and optimism as we are on the other side when we're composing our chart. We're very aware that this lifetime we're embarking on is going to be difficult at best, and we're smart enough to write in 5 separate exit points, or opportunities to head home again when we feel we've accomplished all we intended when we came here. We can take advantage of any of those 5 exit points we chose as we go along. The first, which usually occurs when we're infants, or very young children. The 5th, which is typically charted for our senior citizen years, or any time in between. The classic example of an exit point is surgery, illness, an accident on the road, a fall, a sports injury, any event that either is or could be life-threatening. We've all heard of people who survived an accident or illness against all odds, which simply means they chose not to exercise that particular exit point. We've also heard of people who didn't survive a relatively minor accident, illness, or surgery, or in other words, decided to take advantage of an exit point that might not have looked like an exit point to anyone else. While nothing is more devastating than the loss of a child, there can be a tiny particle of comfort in the knowledge that even infant bodies house timeless, ageless spirits who composed a chart before they came here and opted for the first exit point they themselves designated. There's one more essential thing to remember about exit points that I'll insist on stressing every time this subject comes up. Suicide is never, ever to be thought of, let alone used, as an exit point. No chart ever written has included suicide. And since our charts are our contracts with God, suicide represents the ultimate broken commitment. That's not to say that every suicide is evil, damned, and punished. Such circumstances as mental illness or severe substance abuse to the point where someone truly has no idea what they're doing, or even certain extreme medical conditions, can't possibly be compared to suicides motivated by revenge, cruelty, or cowardice. But please, please, don't misinterpret the fact of exit points as an excuse to manufacture an exit point of your own by even considering taking your own life. Our charts aren't just composed in theory and stored in the memories of our spirit guide and God. They're quite real and tangible, written in gilt script on parchment scrolls and meticulously filed and cared for in a magnificent building on the other side called the Hall of Records. I've had the awesome experience of astrally visiting the Hall of Records many times, and Helena, a recent client who traveled there during hypnosis, went through the same frustration on her trip as hundreds of other clients and I have gone through. Not all clients who visited their past lives through hypnosis also revisit their time on the other side between lives. But after quickly and easily regressing to the life immediately before this one, when she was a blacksmith called Duane Rhodes in the early 1900s, Helena took an unmistakable trip to the other side, described the Hall of Records in precise detail, and then actually located a chart she knew she'd already written for the life she's living now. She took the scroll chart from its shelf, excitedly unrolled it, and found it blank. Just as my scroll for this life was blank when I found it in the Hall of Records, just as my client's scrolls for this life are blank when they locate theirs. My spirit guide Francine confirmed my conclusion from these many identical incidents. We're not allowed to see our own charts. We're supposed to live them until the lifetimes they apply to are over. I can read your chart. Every legitimate psychic can read your chart. That's how we can tell you what's coming up in your life, what to watch out for, what Mr. or Ms. Wright looks like, how many children you'll have, etc., etc. But you'll hear me and every other legitimate psychic readily admit that we're not psychic about ourselves, and now you know why. Our own charts are as off limits to us as yours are to you. Regardless of the details of your chart, your life themes, your option lines, and your exit points, the following guidelines apply to all of us. None of us wrote a mistake-free chart. The purpose of our mistakes is to learn from them. We can't learn from them if we refuse to take responsibility for them. And when we shift the blame for our mistakes, we deprive ourselves of knowledge, which is a guaranteed way to throw ourselves off the path of our chart. Think back on mistakes you've avoided admitting. Then do yourself and your spirit the honor of owning up to them with courage and no excuses. The freedom you'll feel is actually the joy of stepping closer to your own chosen purpose. Every chart is also designed for us to learn from and overcome negativity, which is why we left the perfect negativity-free paradise of the other side for this imperfect negativity-ridden hell of earth. Learning from it means understanding how destructive negativity is, not only for this world and humankind, but also for the progress of every spirit who's living here, including our own. Overcoming it means confronting it, refusing to tolerate it or promote it, and doing active spiritual battle against it. And I guarantee your chart contains a promise to your soul and to God that during this lifetime you would do exactly that. When we write our chart on the other side, we are thriving in the immediate presence of God and in full joyful awareness of our God center as His children. At the core of every chart is our determination to feel the same peaceful, powerful, blessed certainty of that God center as we feel at home and to express it every day of our lives. Expressing our God center means devoting regular time and energy to some kindness, some cause, some purpose that's bigger and finer than we are, that elevates this earth and makes it better for our having been here. Praising God without taking every opportunity to extend ourselves to all of His children, which include every living being around us, cancels out the progress our spirit always intends. And again, because every chart is designed to express an abiding awareness of our sacred God center, no chart ever includes suicide, causing ourselves deliberate physical or emotional harm, or abandoning our self-respect. The life purpose inherent in every chart includes a promise to love ourselves, because by loving ourselves we declare our love for the Father who gave us life to begin with. Here's a wonderful affirmation. I know with each new lifetime I write a new chart that will further me along the path God and I map together, which will inevitably wind its way towards perfection. According to my chart, I will sometimes run, joyful and free, and I will sometimes fall, stand again, and learn from the pain. But I will always remember God's promise that while step after step may be hard and halting, the whole of the journey will be my most divine reward.
Wow, that's a lot of intense information. I wanted to just reiterate about suicides. And to my experience, most of them, most people are not doing this out of vengeance. Yes, I've known people that have done it out of vengeance, and those are usually the ones that will come back. But when it's, as Sylvia was talking about, you know, mental health or in a drug state or something of that nature, and you're not intending to commit suicide, you know, then that's not considered a suicide, as it were. And, you know, if there's questions about it for yourself, go back and listen to this in the archives. Go back and listen to exactly what Sylvia says, because it's a very good description of how to define it. We've had people in church sometimes get very upset about, oh, you know, my loved one had committed suicide, and, you know, it seems like to me 9 times out of 10, it's not a suicide where they have to come back because it wasn't done out of malice. There was some medical condition that you know, the body just couldn't deal with it anymore. So anyway, what do you think, Michael?
Yeah, and sometimes I've heard Sylvia say it's, you know, a lot of folks that have been bipolar, so it's also, you know, a mental illness too, that they are usually make the transition to the other side and cocoon, you know, and healed and until they get back to their full essence. So, yeah, I agree, Tom. There's not a lot of people that really consciously, you know, take their own lives, but, you know, that would be hell, having to come back here again and start all over as a baby and helpless and you can't talk, you can't take care of yourself, and it's like,
yeah,
oh, man.
Yeah.
Again? So.
Yeah, we came in already here going, oh, my God, we're here again. let's see. I was going to mention earlier, today we've got a bonus here. We've got two meditations. So buckle your seatbelts and strap yourself in. And we've got one more piece here. Then we're going to do a meditation, first of two meditations for this week. So we're going to continue on here with more of blessings from the other side.
Past lives.
One of my most comforting, affirming surprises has been the ongoing confirmation, beyond any doubt, that we live many lifetimes on this earth. After doing tens of thousands of past life regressions and 40-plus years of research, I know that we've all lived before, that we're all deeply affected by our previous lifetimes, and that the interaction of our multiple lives follow God's simple, perfect, logical plan for these souls He created. Each of our spirits, distinctive and uniquely ours, was created by God an eternity ago, with an eternity left to live, learn, and grow on an exquisite journey toward our greatest potential. Part of that journey is spent at home on the other side. But we take occasional side trips to Earth for the lessons we have to learn the hard way. And believe me, it doesn't get harder than this. The events we call birth and death are nothing more than the means by which our spirits travel from one dimension to another. Through it all, we're still that same unique spirit God created, gaining wisdom and blessed power along the way. And every step we take on our eternal journey is affected by every step and misstep it took to get there. Here's a simple analogy. Think of our lifetimes on Earth as a school year and summer vacations as the other side. Isn't it silly to imagine that after every summer vacation we'd show up for a new school year a completely different person, having had none of the benefit of classes and experiences from the year before? So that we're just perpetually starting from scratch on our first day every fall? We'd never get out of kindergarten if that were true, nor would we recognize any of our friends and classmates, or for that matter, ourselves. What possible progress could our spirits make, and how could our souls contain so much cumulative knowledge if that describes God's intentions for us? Instead, we're the same unique spirits throughout eternity, advancing our way through this tough school on Earth and the blissful sacred education at home. We repeat courses we find are difficult. We ourselves decide when we're ready to tackle more advanced work on Earth, and then when we're ready to graduate and concentrate exclusively on our postgraduate studies on the other side. And never, ever do we forfeit our history, our infinite wealth of experience, or the original identity that is our birthright from God. Because our spirits entered this life in possession of every moment that came before, we really are affected, physically and emotionally, by every past life we've lived, especially through a phenomenon called cell memory. Every time the spirit leaves yet another of these amazing, complicated, gravity-challenged human bodies, it takes with it the memories it experienced in that body as well as a basic sense of what being in a body is like. If after a few decades, centuries, or millennia on the other side, the spirit opts for another lifetime on Earth and finds itself in a body again, it resonates with the familiarity of that sensation, and from its vantage point in a subconscious mind, sends its memories flooding into every living cell of that body. The cells respond to the past life memories they've received from the spirit mind, and the result is that from birth until death, our conscious minds and bodies are constantly reacting not only to all the input from this life, but also to all the spirit's messages to our cells based on everything it remembers about being in a body. I've had so many fascinating encounters with cell memory that I could write a book on the subject. In fact, I already have. One gratifying regression occurred with Stuart, an Englishman in his late 40s, who told me at the beginning of our session that he was plagued by a couple of chronic problems. One was a recurring sharp pain in his chest despite years of tests showing that he was really healthy, without a single physiological problem in his chest or anywhere else. The other was an unusually oppressive fear of death that didn't become noticeable until his 41st birthday, which he dismissed as a typical midlife crisis symptom but couldn't seem to shake. By the end of our session, he'd experienced two past lives, one in the pre-Civil War South that ended with a gunshot to the heart by a political rival when he was 42, and one in Austria when he died at the age of 43 from what we recognize today as lung cancer. He still drops me a note every few months to say his chest pains are non-existent, and while he can't say he's looking forward to death, it's not even on his top 10 list of fears anymore, let alone something that preoccupies him as it did when his cell memory reacted to being in a body in its early 40s.
Yeah, that's a unique phenomenon, the cell memory, and you know, where do feelings come from that seem out of the blue, or why do you have these phobias that just seem to pop up out of nowhere when you're, you know, even at work, just seems like out of nowhere. It's like, oh, why am I bothered by things? Why am I all of a sudden worried about something exploding, or why, you know, and in my lifetime, you know, I don't have recollection of an issue why I would be so afraid of something exploding on me. I work, there's chemicals and electricity and things like that, but it's, you know, it's relatively safe what we're doing, and yet I've had this fear of something exploding, and I was annihilated by it, and, you know, it's an interesting phenomenon to have that go through your mind.
We need to do a past life regression on you. Release that phobia.
That's close. I've actually asked, you know, throughout my day, it's like realizing, wait a minute, there's no relevance to what I'm thinking and feeling related to where I'm at. And, you know, at least not in a, direct connection to it. The fear of being annihilated in an explosion just turned out to be unrelated. It wasn't relevant to what I was doing. So I finally said, you know what, this isn't a valid fear. This isn't a valid memory of mine for this lifetime. And so it's really subsided.
Good. That's excellent. Good job, Tom.
You got any more information or comments, or do we want to just keep going on to the, ready for the meditation at this time?
There was a question in the chat room. Kinsey's mom was asking how Sylvia is doing, and she's doing good. She actually is doing just a few phone readings for folks, so definitely doing better. And, you know, we say prayers for her to continue to do better and better. And then there's also a comment that on the chat room about birthmarks, you know, are being carried over from a past life, or fatal wounds from a past life, which Sylvia has told us. And that's kind of interesting when people ask her about their birthmark and like where it came from. So always more information that we're learning is always good. So yeah, we're ready for a meditation. Already?
All right. Yep. All right, great. So everybody that's in an appropriate place for a meditation, set yourself down and quiet your mind and take a few deep breaths. You know, if you're driving, of course, or operating heavy machinery, or I was going through my head today all the things that I could list of inappropriate activities for closing your eyes and relaxing your mind. But anyway, take a few minutes just to breathe a little bit and relax your mind, close your eyes, and I'm going to start this meditation here.
If you find yourself developing a sudden phobia over something that never especially bothered you before, or if some chronic physical problem develops that doctors seem to have a hard time diagnosing, you might consider the distinct possibility that it's cell memory in action, reacting to a past life that only interferes with this life to the extent that you allow it. By the way, I do need to add one very important reminder. Please don't ever let any psychic, including me, become a substitute for a qualified member of the medical community. I work with literally hundreds of doctors and psychiatrists throughout the country, not instead of them, and as powerful as the effect of cell memory can be, it isn't the answer to every physical or emotional problem you might be having. The following meditation will give you a glimpse into the rich, amazing history of your spirit's journey and help you uncover and let go of any pain and fear you are carrying from a past life that might be holding you back in this one. Remember, don't do this if you're driving. To prepare for this beautiful visit to your own legacy, I want you to surround yourself with the white light of the Holy Spirit, and then in a magnificent aura around that white light, a glow of deep purple, the royal color of God who created you, God whose genetic flame burns inside you, God who will guide you safely back down the path you've already traveled, to assure you that you have lived an eternity. You will live an eternity. And in our lives, there is truly no end. You close your eyes and feel a legion of protection assemble around you. Your spirit guide, a host of white-winged angels, silently gathering to promise that with every step you take until you return, no danger, only joy will come to you. You don't need to see this sacred army. You feel their presence, their divine, unconditional love wrapping itself around your body, a warm, safe cloak, impenetrable but weightless as glistening gossamer. You slowly stand, energized and confident, and feel the hem of your cloak whisper gently against your ankle. You will never be alone, it reminds you. Your spirit guide and angels are with you, loving you, blessing this journey, blessing you for having the courage to witness your immortality. You begin to walk, pulling your cloak more securely around you. Ahead of you, a silver tube appears, its opening large enough for you to step inside. It welcomes you, thrills you, fills you with the excitement of knowing that at its end wait secrets that are just for you and will change your view of yourself and your spirit forever. Your strides are strong and sure as you move to the inviting entrance of the silver tube, and without fear, you cross its threshold, The instant your foot touches the cool, firm floor inside, this gorgeous silver tube begins to vibrate, shaking loose from its curved walls and ceiling a shower of glitter, a dusting of tiny silver-green sparkles, so soft and fine that they're absorbed into your skin as they cover you. Your body and your spirit, hungry for nourishment and healing, joyfully consume this twinkling haze of purity. And you notice that with every new step you take, you feel stronger, more powerful, more connected to your vital God center than ever before. Energized, exhilarated with curiosity about what lies ahead, you begin to run. Your cloak of protection from your spirit guides and angels, now sparkling with that same silver-green glitter, billows merrily around you as you run, closer and closer to the thrilling surprises that wait at the end of this miraculous, glistening silver tube. The tube widens, signaling that you're almost to the exit. When you look ahead and realize that everything that lies ahead is shrouded in a heavy white mist, hanging in the warm air, blocking your view. Your step slows, and for just an instant, you're hesitant and a little afraid, tempted to turn back. But your fingers lightly touch the cloak that embraces you, and you hear from those loving voices again. We are with you, blessing you for having the courage to witness your immortality. A sacred promise, too full of love to doubt. You take a breath and inch forward into the heavy cloud of mist and find yourself almost laughing with relief. It's safe and harmless and nothing but an opaque veil that momentarily blocks your vision, but not your movement. And as your steps become confident again, you know that this veil is all that's ever stood between you and a glimpse of your spirit's rich history. This veil, this quiet mist, was never there to stop you. Only your fear and your lack of faith have done that. But now, protected, unafraid, and surging with the same faith in God that He has always had in you, you move on through this low cloud toward your past. Your reward for not turning back comes quickly as beyond mist, beyond the tube's wide exit, you begin to make out the impossibly exquisite sight of a beautiful golden bridge, glimmering in the dancing rays of a brilliant sun and spanning a clear, blue rushing stream. You can't wait to get there. You feel lighter than air. Your bare feet scarcely touching the smooth brick that leads you out of the tube and onto this strong arch. You stop for a moment in the middle of the glistening bridge, look down, and watch the crystal water dancing over the rocks along the stream's shoreline. The sound of this rush of pure blue is almost hypnotic. The audible glory of life and undisturbed nature as perfect, searching and eternally potent as your spirit. Your hands reluctantly let go of the warm railing, and you force your gaze away from the stream to the land beyond the bridge that you haven't let yourself face until now. It takes you a moment to adjust to the light of the bright sun and the view ahead. When you're finally able to focus, you catch your breath, almost afraid to believe that the mystical vision past the stream and the golden bridge is real, but knowing it is. You blink back the tears that momentarily blur this place that your conscious mind is sure it's never seen before, but your spirit mind recognizes as home. Mountains, desert, a hut in a quiet clearing in a vast forest. A quaint neighborhood from a time gone by, its cobblestone streets lined with gas-lit lamps. A village filled with bustling, colorful, open-air markets and ox-driven carts. The air is thick with the sound of children playing nearby. A circle of covered wagons in the wilderness, gathered around a huge black pot over a fire, a simmering meal of fragrant stew. A harbor filled with tall ships and the smell of the sea. A cluster of crude igloos huddled together in an endless field of ice and snow. Only you know the sight that greets you at this moment, and you know it's as much a part of you as your soul itself. You ask yourself for the name of this place where you are, and your answer comes immediately, in the very first word that comes into your mind. As you begin walking off the bridge towards this strange, familiar place, you become aware of people noticing you, their faces filling with happy surprise as they recognize you. They hurry to greet you. At first, you can't identify them, dressed as they are in odd clothes from this other time and place you found. But the closer they get, and the more you look past their clothing and faces that refuse to come into full focus, the more you recognize that these are spirits you deeply loved during your life in this place, and you step into the embrace of this magical reunion. You feel the tender touch of your mother from that time, the strong arms of your father, the comforting hugs of brothers, sisters, friends, your closest confidant back then, the uniquely charged intimacy of your lover's hand as it takes yours. The overwhelming truth washes over you in strong, sacred waves. You knew these people. You know them now. Your spirit yearned to see them again, and your love for each other, a persistent whisper in your soul's reality, is as powerful and eternal as life itself. Elated to be with you, but knowing it's too soon for you to stay, they guide you gently back toward the bridge, to the edge of the crystal stream. You understand their purpose, and trusting them, you lean forward slightly and look down into the water to your reflection staring back at you. Not the you that entered the silver tube and took those first steps into the golden bridge, but the you that lived in this place, in this time, among the loved and loving people. You study the reflection until you know it by heart and can bring it back through the tube with you. At first glance, the reflection of a stranger, but a body that was once home to the spirit that is yours and yours alone. And appreciate it with all its beauty and its flaws as an essential part of who you are now. You turn to face your loved ones again, their kisses light and tender against your cheeks, as without sadness you say goodbye, confident in your certainty that now that you've found your way, you can come back whenever you like to visit this or any other place in the cherished memories of your spirit. Their love, the comfort of their embrace, the deep, dear familiarity of this time in this home, and the reflection that looked back at you from the sparkling stream will stay with you long after you've left to return to the time you call today. And as you walk back across the golden bridge and into the glittering silver tube again, you know beyond all doubt that in these few short minutes your spirit has been nourished, healed, and allowed to soar to its sacred birthright of eternity. Now, try this affirmation. Today, I embrace all the love, wisdom, and comfort from all my past lives on this earth, and I release all negativity, fear, illness, and uncertainty from those same lives into the white light of the Holy Spirit, so that in liberating myself from any harmful cell memory, I can remove these unnecessary barriers that stand between me and the center of my eternal spirit, which is the God who created it.
Wow. So take a moment and bring yourselves back. It's really great to, I posted that or added that affirmation right in the end there so people would be, you know, in a good receptive frame of mind with that affirmation. So give yourself a moment to come back all the way back to full consciousness. And as we go forward again, Michael, what did you get to experience with that?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Oh, sorry. I was saying, I was just curious what you got to experience through that meditation. I was sort of in and out and in and out.
Yeah, me too. And then actually someone showed up at the office here. Jen showed up to, you know, help out a little bit, pick up some stuff. So, I actually had to step out of it for a while.
Oh, okay. You know, that's a distraction. Yeah, somebody coming into the office. There you go. Well, now that everybody's hopefully back from that, and I did speak out a little soon here, not realizing how much time is we've got here. We've got just enough time for one more segment, and so we're not going to make it to the second meditation tonight. But we've got one more segment here, and we can get started with that, and that'll be our evening. So you ready? You got anything else before we go on, Michael?
No, sounds good.
Okay, here we go.
Contacting the other side.
The spirits of our loved ones from the other side are with us all the time, watching over us, trying to communicate, hoping to somehow get our attention to prove to us that they're very much alive and that our fear of death is groundless. All we have to do to recognize those spirits is develop our tools, our open-minded awareness, and our faith in the God Center that burns inside us and keeps us eternally connected to each other and to our Father. The paradise of home, where our departed loved ones reside, is right here among us, just 3 short feet above our ground level. The only reason we don't readily perceive its presence is that it exists at a much higher frequency than we do. I've often used the analogy of the blades on an electric fan. When the fan is running at its lowest speed, we can see the blades clearly. But at its highest speed, the blades seem to disappear. To believe spirits don't exist because we can't see them amounts to believing an electric fan running at its highest speed no longer has blades. But frequency levels aside, there is no difference between us here on Earth and the spirits on the other side. In fact, they are us and we are them, temporarily separated by simple physics, but I promise you, paying regular visits to each other, limited by nothing but our own reluctance to accept any news that seems too good to be true. And while we may not be consciously aware of it, our spirits, having had an eternity of practice, know exactly how to travel back and forth between the dimensions, no matter which one we happen to be living on at the time. So of course we spirits communicate with each other. It's just a matter of paying attention. I've seen and heard spirits from the other side all my life, and thank God I had my brilliantly psychic grandmother Ada there to teach me the basics of what to watch and listen for. Verbal contact from the other side comes in 2 ways. Actual voices, which usually get distorted into a high and frankly annoying chirping sound as they cross dimensions, and infused knowledge, which is simply information passed directly from one mind to another. Those things you suddenly just know, without having a clue how or why you know it. You certainly don't have to be a professional psychic to hear spirit voices. In fact, countless clients have heard them and simply not understood what they were or where they were coming from. It's imperative to add that these are not the voices that purportedly tell psychotics and criminals to do terrible things. Don't forget, the other side is a paradise of absolute love. So spirit voices who are truly from home are incapable of aiding and abetting any cruel thoughts and actions. And those spirit voices are nothing to be afraid of. But I've had plenty of civilian witnesses to spirits, apparent special enjoyment of imprinting their voices on audio tape. One client's spirit guide clearly uttered the client's name on audio tape during a regression. A notoriously protective dog I own in a past life has been heard barking furiously on tape at several of my haunting investigations, even though none of us at the actual site heard a single sound at the time. Several clients' tape recorders simultaneously captured the sound of heartbreaking wailing and crying in a completely silent room one night when my spirit guide, Francine, was giving a lecture about the crucifixion of Christ. Never underestimate how opportunistic spirits are, ready to leap at any chance to let us know they're around. So it's not surprising that they'll happily take advantage of the magnetic property of audio tape when they want to be heard. Because of that, I recommend a simple exercise if you're curious about trying to hear spirit voices yourself. Set up an audio cassette recorder in a room in your home, other than where you sleep, so that you won't lie awake all night listening for some foreign noise. Before you fall asleep, surround yourself with the white light of the Holy Spirit for protection. Then invite your spirit guide, your deceased loved ones, and any other spirit sent by God from the other side to visit during the night and leave their imprint on tape. You may not get anything for several nights, weeks, or even months, but at best, you'll have success sooner or later and end up with a genuine recording of a visit from paradise. At worst, by simply providing spirits with this opportunity, you'll be acknowledging your blessed connection to the other side and the eternity of your own soul. Infused knowledge from the other side is obviously faster and more subtle than voice communication. I use infused knowledge for everything from messages about misplaced objects, hidden wills, or journals and insurance policies to the location of missing bodies of murder victims, the details of their deaths, and even the names of their killers. Rather than receiving a rush of words, I'm given this information in a flood of images instead, as quickly as I can describe them, knowing without knowing how I know, just certain that I'm not the source, only the tube through which that information is flowing. I guarantee you've received infused knowledge yourself, from your spirit guide or a departed loved one, and mislabeled it an instinct or a sudden impulse or some awareness that just came over you. It can be as trivial as answering the phone before it rings or as critical as an urgent compulsion to check on someone you love and discovering they're in serious trouble. Maybe most common of all is infused knowledge during sleep, when the cluttered conscious mind is out of the way and the spirit mind in the subconscious can communicate freely with other spirits. If you've ever gone to sleep with a problem on your mind and awakened with a solution without a clue where it came from, you've experienced infused knowledge from the loving, watchful spirits on the other side. It's that simple and that divine. Spirits can briefly manifest themselves in physical form among us as well, and again, the ability to see them is hardly limited to those of us whose lives are devoted to the psychic and ritual world. Children and animals, who are the most psychic beings on earth, routinely see and react to spirits, gloriously unaware that traditional society thinks there's something inappropriate or suspect about that behavior. Adults commonly see spirits too. They're just more reluctant to talk about it in public because, take it from me, being called crazy can start to get on your nerves after a while. I sat with a client a while ago whose husband appeared at the foot of her bed just hours after his violent death in a car fire. Healthy, happy, and perfect. His smile reassuring her with exquisite love before he vanished again. She'd shared this blessed experience with her best friend, who dismissed it as a reaction to the sedative my client's doctor had prescribed. That must have been one strong sedative causing such a realistic hallucination when my client hadn't even taken it yet.
Yeah, that's really interesting on the infusion. And, one of the things that I've experienced when you're talking with someone or like in study group, if someone's got a problem and we're sharing ideas and we'll start to talk and out of nowhere it seems like these words come out of my mouth and I'm like, wow, I don't remember when did that come into my head, or when did that, sometimes it's not just remembering what we've read about. We get help from the other side. I believe that, pieces come together and combine and help solve or help somebody understand what they're dealing with, and how to work with those situations.
All right. Well, we're actually kind of finishing up Blessings from the Other Side. We only have a couple short segments, and what are we going to do next, Tom?
Well, actually, we do have more from Blessings. For this week, we're done. I want to hang on to these last pieces to start for next week. Keep people on the edge of their seat and make sure they come back next time. Yeah, right. Like they try and do on TV. So we've got plenty more of this information for next week. And then, from there we can determine where we want to go.
Well, great. It is a lot of wonderful information. So I did want to say regarding Halloween, I think the candle that we light can be for, those souls who are earthbound and haven't made the transition to the other side. I don't know what they think about all the goblins and witches and stuff, running around, but like Sylvia says, light a candle and just tell them to go toward the light and they will find peace and happiness. Thing to do, like on tomorrow night, or of course, on Friday, All Saints Day. All Saints Day. So another good show. Still a little bit in the middle of moving and everything, but that's okay. We'll be in our new office next week. And just want to thank everyone for tuning in and either live or those people that do tune in to the archived on-demand shows. We definitely appreciate it. And thank you to Bob helping out in the chat room. Anything else, Tom?
Do check out Facebook, as Michael was talking about. We do have Sunday services in Renton, Washington, San Jose, California, Taylor, Michigan, and Las Vegas, Nevada. So by all means, go to novus.org to check out locations and times. We will be updating the address of the San Jose, California location, so that people are aware, we'll be able to get there. That'd be helpful, huh? And Michael did, let people know, announced earlier the location. So, you can check out that information on the website and Facebook. And of course, for those that are have yet to join the study group, as Michael was having fun with, you want to know more about the philosophy, get more in-depth knowledge, understanding of yourself and this, how this philosophy helps you, join study group program. You don't have to join a group. If there isn't one in your area, start one on your own. And as people in your area contact us, we will, get you guys together and you can work together on it. So That program's available. You can read about that on the at novus.org, of course. So I had a great week, and I look forward to being here available for next week.
And one more thing, too, about moving is that we're only going to have the main number, the 408-379-7070. We had quite a few lines here at this office in San Jose, but we moved back to the little office in Campbell. It's only going to be, like, you know, the main number. If, you know, you want to reach us for any reason, or Brooke and study group to find out about study group, just call the 408-379-7070. All right, Tom. Well, thanks a lot. We appreciate it. This is the New Spirit Radio Show by Novus Spiritus. And we'll be coming to you live every Wednesday, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Eastern. And besides Facebook, you know, do check out novus.org and sylviabrown.com. God bless you all. We love you. And share the knowledge. Good night.